2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hello, and welcome to Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with
Amy Donaldson.
And we are, it's just us today, but have so much stuff to talk
about. That's because we got lots to say.
It's true. It's true. And just as we were setting up some of the things we want to talk about, it seems overwhelming to some degree. And the reason I say that is because there's nothing we discussed that couldn't go on for an hour.
Yeah, and yet, have it be its own show.
And these are the things that are facing just our communities, our country, certainly, and some of the national issues we're going to discuss. But there's part of me that is worried that we as a society are becoming overwhelmed by the issues that face us.
Yeah.
And so when and at the end, Amy brought up that we want to talk about why we started our podcast. And the reason I think that's important is because of stuff like what we're going to talk about. There are going to be subjects that you talk to people about that you're never going to change them. And there's no necessarily perfect right answer. However, they all deserve your time, your effort, and your dialogue constructively.
And there's a reason to keep engaging in those conversations.
Because if you don't, we don't get anywhere.
And I would say that persuading people to think like you is not one of them.
Totally. Not one of them. Just try to be heard. Okay. So I want to start out the week before, there was an incident in the NFL where at the end of the Pittsburgh Steelers-Cleveland Browns game, for reasons that I still don't totally understand why they ran this play, actually, because the game was pretty much over.
Mm-hmm.
However, Pittsburgh's quarterback, Mason Rudolph, drops back, and he is tackled by defensive end Myles Garrett from the Browns. And the play goes on, and, the game ends. But then what you realize is that later, when we look back, there's a fight starts.
Yeah.
And in football, there's a lot of big, huge guys. And what was surprising is, A, that there was a lot of punches thrown and a lot of physical activity going, not just pushing and shoving like sometimes happens.
Which I think is important. The quarterback who had his helmet ripped off and then was hit in the head with the helmet by Myles Garrett actually tried to pull Myles Garrett's helmet off when they were under the pile. And notoriously, if you played football or you know someone who did, I covered it for 20 years, you never want to be on the bottom of that pile.
Ever.
Because all kinds of bad things happen at the bottom of the pile that would get any one of us arrested.
It is assault by every possible name.
Yeah.
That is right.
So I saw that, and my first reaction was, he should be suspended for a few games, he should pay a fine, and if the quarterback is injured, like say he sustained a concussion and he missed 7 games or a year, then Miles, I think that when you injure someone in a purposeful act like that, your suspension should equal what their injury causes them to be out.
Agree 100%.
And also without pay.
That's right. Certainly without pay.
So,
yes.
So I think that was pretty reasonable. I didn't see any issue with it. And then as you saw unfold.
The saga continues. Now, I want to go back, first of all. The whole incident, by the way, well, not the whole incident, but the extracurricular that is the violence was pretty much precipitated by the quarterback because he was pissed that the guy tackled him, which was bad. I won't even argue that. Uh-huh. However, up until then, it was just kind of your typical overreaction tackle a quarterback, probably laying him a little too long. Mm-hmm. But what you find out is, again, as you described, there was some grabbing. Mm-hmm. And then the quarterback, you could, and they have to, a couple of angles when they show this. He was the first guy trying to rip off the other guy's helmet, all right? Mm-hmm. And when you see that, it's pretty violent, him twisting that guy's neck around.
And if you have, and you've worn a helmet.
I've
worn a football helmet, and they are so tight that putting it on is painful. Like, you know how I feel. I won't even wear earphones in the studio because it hurts my ears. But, I mean, you would interview these guys and they have creases
in their head. That's right.
Where the helmet has
been on
their head.
You don't want your head bouncing around inside.
You don't want it bouncing around. Right. And also, you don't want the helmet to pop off because the helmet comes off even accidentally.
Then you're totally exposed.
You're totally exposed and you need to leave the game.
Yeah.
You're required now to leave the game.
Right.
So there's a lot of reasons for it, but it's those things are like almost like vacuum sealed on their heads. So when you see a guy pull a helmet off, he is going to do serious damage to somebody's neck or head.
Absolutely. So now you can kind of understand. I'm not saying that it is indefensible what happened. Okay, let's mm-hmm. start with that. I am not trying to defend that, but I do understand what precipitated him just losing his stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. and that I'm only saying that to say that he was not right in doing what he did. However, I understand why he did it. Okay, so the guy tries to rip off his helmet. He gets up now, and other players kind of come along trying to defuse the situation. Myles Garrett, to pick up the quarterback, Mason Rudolph, he grabs him by the helmet. Turns out it comes off. So then Mason Rudolph goes after him. There's people in between them trying to hold one guy back and the other guy back, and they're pulling. And Garrett, as I said, does the indefensible, and he swings the helmet. And fortunately, if ever there was some good fortune here, rather than hitting with the crown of the helmet on the top of his head, it was kind of the bottom part, and it was more of a glancing blow, which because Rudolph never stopped.
Yeah.
So when it
he's
hit him,
going after
right,
him.
He's still going after
him. There's some
even
offensive linemen
hit,
who
right?
are kind of trying to protect him.
And right. So it was horrific. I'm not even saying that, but it didn't turn out as bad as it was. So he gets suspended. All right. I'm going to move this forward because afterwards I had a chance to watch one of the NFL shows before Sunday football. And one of them, it was on Fox Sports. And there's Michael Strahan, Jimmy Johnson, Howie Long, Terry Bradshaw, and Kurt Benefee. And I think I've got all of them. So the idea was I heard each of these people, and all of them have played football, actually, as it turns out. Because Jimmy Johnson, though he's a coach, he also played at Arkansas with Jerry Jones, as it turns out. So anyway, each of them described Garrett as a decent human being who totally lost his stuff when this thing transpired. But Michael Strahan and the other players, too, will say that in practice, these kinds of incidents happen on occasion. Mm-hmm. That is not to say that it's right, but that is to say that people lose their tempers. And when that happens, irrational behavior takes place. And Strahan even mentioned that in practice, he hit somebody with his helmet.
All right?
To something he is today ashamed about.
Yeah.
But it happened, and it doesn't define him because it didn't happen in a game, and it certainly wasn't broadcast. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Myles Garrett, I think the same thing. You know, he should be suspended. I got no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But now he is brought up. The idea that what precipitated that was him being called a racial slur, which only came out after he had his appeal with the NFL, which was upheld. Mm-hmm. So he is still suspended indefinitely, at least through the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, as a black person, I am surprised to hear this allegation because if
surprise,
that was
a, is it surprise or is it like you I feel this way sometimes when you hear a sexual harassment claim after or something and they had all this time to bring that up or plenty of opportunity to say this is why I did what I this is why I left or this is why I complained or this is why I took the action that I did. And it always makes me really, really nervous and afraid that it's not true and it's going to just make it harder because there are so many people so willing to believe that every sexual harassment or sexual assault claim is made up,
right?
That I get nervous about that, and then it'll just lead to as you and I have had these discussions with people. See, we told you,
right?
They're all. It's not true.
And see, I'm not I'm rarely. Though what you say is true, I'm not. Though I'm usually believing It's rare that people make those allegations.
I agree.
However,
it's absolutely rare.
I'm still suspect because this is kind of one of those landmine things. If you're going to throw this out here, mm-hmm. it is not. It's pretty much the worst thing you could say, you know. And you're on a football field with other people of color, many of them your teammates, by the way. So he's accusing Mason Rudolph of using a slur, and he's playing for a team with a black coach and plenty of black teammates, and he's played football, which means he's been around plenty of black people, plenty of African-American people, and plenty of non-white people, honestly, his entire life at this point. Okay.
Look at his line.
Exactly, right?
Look at the guys who have to protect him.
The guys who were trying to help him when all this stuff was breaking loose. Okay.
Yeah.
So if that were the case, if I'm Myles Garrett, that's the first thing I'm saying. I am not holding that until after I get suspended because I've already hit the guy with the helmet. I know I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I've had time, even the next day after I've had time to relax and talk to my lawyer or my union representative, I have to bring this out into the open to, in the very least, sort of explain my ridiculously heinous behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had two thoughts when I heard it. I thought that if something like that got said in the heat, because stuff like that does get said.
It's absolutely. It does happen.
I remember doing a story on can coaches really enforce a no, you know, can they really enforce a language policy, whether that's foul language or using racial slurs?
Because you can enforce it by suspending everybody whenever you hear it.
And some coaches said, absolutely, I don't tolerate it. I don't let kids participate if they use that language. And then other coaches said, well, this is the language they use. We can't do anything about it. So I just make sure they don't use it against one another or in a game, which is silly because you can't, if you're a person like me who swears, it's really hard. Sometimes it comes out and you're not
totally
prepared
true.
For it. So that's why it's a difficult thing. But I think that, so my feeling was that word may have, or those words may have been, you know, tossed about there by the people involved in that melee. And he may have heard something like that. That may be true. But I think for me, the biggest issue is, and this is my problem with politics today, too. We're always trying to explain our own bad acts by saying, look what they did. They made me do it. And to me, that is the essence of criminal thinking. I committed a bad act because you did something wrong.
That's what the abuser always says about the women.
She made me do it.
She pissed me off, so I whacked her upside the head. Yeah, okay.
You made me. Your behavior forced me to behave like a criminal. And I really think that we have to start saying, whether it's sports or politics or anywhere else in our lives, like, you are responsible for what happens to you. Whether if someone's rude to you, they call you names. I have had that experience. And I promise you, I did not punch him. Right. I didn't react with the same vitriol. And that's where I feel he went wrong. So to me, it's kind of beside the point.
It's not totally beside the point.
Except that we don't want that language going. I mean, we don't want it to be used.
I understand
right?
that. However, if a white person called me the N-word, I would certainly consider physical violence, though I would like to believe I would behave.
So say we're in the newsroom. And somebody, you're in an argument with someone and they use a racial slur towards you and you punch them. Do you think the law is going to take that into consideration?
I don't know about the law.
Our
bosses. Well, I think our bosses would.
Yeah.
And I think that if somebody used the C word in the newsroom and they called you that, I think our bosses would take that into consideration and that other person probably gets fired.
Sure.
All right.
Because those are probably violations of policy.
In a whole
so that's why it matters in
right.
Miles' case.
And again,
this is his workplace.
That's exactly right. This is his workplace.
Yeah.
And so in that way, and we've gone way too long on this, but I feel like there are mitigating circumstances that should be considered. Mm-hmm. It is still not to defend what he did, because what he did was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I am saying that 100 times. And even if he did get called out, I still don't think that was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the very least, I mean, I'd rather you punched him. Throwing the helmet, that's just over the top because it could have killed him. And I just don't find that acceptable whatsoever. So this is only to say there's a lot of mitigating circumstances. Hopefully we're going to find out what's going on. I am still suspect of the allegation because I just can't even imagine Mason Rudolph being that stupid in that situation, knowing he's got to go back into the locker room with his black coach and his black teammates.
And that his black teammates could hear him.
Right. And somebody, right. I would be shocked if somebody didn't hear that. And no, at this point, nobody has come to corroborate Myles Garrett's allegations, which, by the way, I don't know if I actually heard him say as much as I think it was said by his lawyer. However, okay. I don't know that for a fact. I just feel as though when I heard the statements made, it sounded very lawyery. So that way I understand. And that's kind of what you pay your lawyer for. OK, when we come back,
we're talking about Democratic debates.
We're going to talk about some
Does
debates.
Does anybody care?
Because, well,
is anybody watching?
I care because I need a new president. But when we come back, we will start with that. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back with Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And before we talked about some football, now we're going to politics because there's always some
politics. Because it's a different sport. And I really feel like there's a lot of parallels. And sadly, because I don't think politics should be a kind of a all or nothing, yeah. You know, winner take all type situation. I really think it should be much more of a collaboration. What everyone hates in sports, everyone gets a trophy. That's what politics should be. Everyone should get something out of our political process. Everyone should get something out of negotiation.
I hate the act idea that everybody gets a trophy. That's terrible.
I know, but I'm saying politics should be the place where you get a trophy for participation. Everyone should get something for participating. Like, no one should leave empty-handed from the political process, right?
Okay, that's fair.
And I mean, obviously, there are exceptions.
I've been enlightened today. Thank you, Amy.
There are exceptions. People who are super, super, you know, extremists. But for the most part, I've always seen politics as the way we solve problems in this country. We have a problem. Let's just take DACA, for instance. The Deferred Action Against Childhood Arrival. So kids are brought to this country by their parents. They're brought here illegally. And they grow up here. They only know this country. They're Americans just as much as I'm an American. And the difference is that I was lucky enough to be born here. They were not. And so President Obama signed an executive order, which I was not in favor of because I knew this would happen. And President Trump repealed it. So right now it's with the Supreme Court. And it's my feeling that the Supreme Court should overturn that. And that DACA should be invalidated. It was never supposed. It never should have been an executive order. Congress should have taken up this issue, and they are derelict in their duty, in my opinion. If these kids have been failed by anyone, they've been failed by Congress. And so, so you have this process where people are gathering information. So everyone should get something out of that. Should they have a pass to citizenship immediately? Should that be delayed? What should that cost? What penalty should their parents pay for bringing them here illegally?
But that's just one issue, though. You're talking about.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but so you look at this issue, then everyone should be able to get something that they feel good about, right? So that's why I think politics is not a zero sum game.
Yes.
But when I watch the Democratic debates and everyone's like, seven key elements, winners and losers from the debates, greatest quotes, best zingers from the debates.
I hate that zinger thing, by the way.
I know. And I honestly feel like this is somewhat, we're going to talk about impeachment hearings in our next segment, but I honestly feel like this is sort of what the impeachment hearings are. Can I get a 30-second, minute and a half clip that everyone can share on their social media that shows me kicking some trash, right? That's what I feel like the debates are. Like, let me have my moment so I can use it to raise a bunch of money because I really have good ideas. And that all may be true, but it's just so disheartening to me that
it's
this is
shallow.
What it's become. Like, I've never thought massive debates were super scintillating television, But now, if they're not, people are like, we just want to watch the clips.
And so, for me, I watch and I try to get people and listen to their ideas. Mm-hmm. And over time, I believe you because one debate or two debates doesn't really help you. But
yeah.
Over time, you get to a sense of what the people who are the candidates, what their true their tenets are, what their beliefs are, and you at least how educated and how intellectually astute about politics and the political issues that face our country are. And so when I watch Elizabeth Warren, the reason I like her as much as I always have is because she's thoughtful. Is she get everything right? No, but nobody does, right? Because there's always something I like that somebody else doesn't. And that's, you know, everybody has a stake in this. However, when I compare her to other candidates, I have to say to myself, then I start comparing and saying, well, I like this; these things they have in common, and then there's shortcomings that one may have that the other might not have, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I love Tim Kaine for a number of reasons, most of which is he's as authentic as any of the candidates on that on the dais, because he is telling you what he believes and why he believes it, and he doesn't use a lot of political speak, and I do feel like he legitimately wants this thing. Now, the problem is,
You're talking about Andrew Yang?
Andrew Yang, did I say?
Yeah, you said Tim Kaine.
Tim Kaine.
I thought.
You know, Tim Kaine is
the
that
former
guy,
VP. Yeah,
and I don't even like him. I am so sorry. Forgive me.
I know. I was like stunned. Andrew I was Kaine, like, wow, tell me why you like him.
The Asian guy who Yang. Likes math. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
No, and who's so going to give me $1,000?
That's right. He wants to give everybody $1,000. So, but the point is, Andrew Kaine, again, I believe he is sincere. And he is, you know, as opposed to so many other people who are disingenuous when they say these things, he legitimately wants to do this for reasons that he has laid out. Mm-hmm. Similarly, Elizabeth Warren, I read her book. I just find that she's
I don't think, as far as Democratic candidates go, I think that they're all decent human beings.
Absolutely.
Like, I didn't, there's nobody that I, maybe except Michael Bloomberg, don't
think. He's not even in a race yet.
I
even
know.
Tom Steyer.
I don't know enough about him.
He's not terrible either.
Yeah, I have a.
I have a
millionaire billionaire revulsion thing. So, but I think though they are good human beings, and I do think they all think like they have answers, and that's why they want to run for office. You know, and I vacillated. Between the candidates, like, you know, I'll be with Elizabeth Warren and then I'll hear something that Kamala Harris says. Mm-hmm. And I'm very persuaded by
Absolutely.
That. And then I really have liked moments of Cory Booker's philosophy, although I don't think he has a ton of substantive plan. He has a lot of good ideas. And I saw him on The View when he and Meghan McCain, she was pretty... I don't know. She was kind of in attack mode about the gun rights thing. And she was responding to Beto O'Rourke saying, we should go around and collect all the AR 47s.
Yeah.
She was rightfully upset by that and saying this will never work. Yeah. And he actually, I thought, had a really great moment where he was saying, like, this is the problem. Like, we can't keep attacking each other because we disagree. In this country, we have to get back to figuring out how we can work together. Even if we disagree, right? Like, the disagreement will actually make for better plans and policies.
Right, because if you can detail what you disagree about, maybe you find commonality that makes it palatable for both of you.
And I think one thing that the Democratic debates have caused me to realize is how much I miss us being one country, right? So I feel like so often it's... And President Trump's really terrible at this. He says constantly, the Republicans this, Republicans that. Well, this country is not made up of just Republicans. And many, many people who are not affiliated with the Republican Party, who have nothing to do with it and don't believe a single thing in the platform, are great patriots of this country. And I find it just super, super offensive.
Patriots take all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. But I find it offensive
all belief systems.
That we've gotten to this point now that the parties even met. I really thought the parties were going to go, they were going to crash and burn after the 2016 election because
we could only hope.
They both failed so miserably,
yes.
Right?
But interestingly, because they talked about if that the Republicans could possibly have just had to start all over again. And I remember when the Democrats did that, I thought to myself, well, they've in the span of 8 years, they went from owning everything to just having nothing. So I still feel like both parties have a lot of reshaping to do. But
reshaping.
Well, no, but I'm just saying.
I'm going to say an overhaul. Well, if you want to get people us who are in the middle, like I.
What I want is younger voices, because I still feel like, look, I'm not totally an ageist, though I'd be lying if I said I wasn't kind of an ageist. I don't want a 78-year-old president, but I think if Elizabeth Warren gets elected, she's going to be a 78-year-old president. All right. I feel as though oftentimes, as an old person myself, well, almost old person myself, we get set in our ways. We think that this what we want is better, and we sometimes fail to realize the value, and we lose the potential enlightenment of learning how things are done in a way that's a little foreign to us. All right. I don't love social media, but I know it has value if used in the proper fashion. I could be one of those people who say, no, I don't. I'm not. But the Twitter and the Instagram. No, I understand that each of these things have some value if we are thoughtful in how we they're instruments, they're tools. Right. Similarly, with politics, I know that in as much as there is wisdom and understanding the political system that we have in place, I still believe that continuing to do it the old way hasn't totally served us particularly well, you know, year after year after year. If we were to can bring in some new ideas, some change some of the ways we've behaved and we use our political systems so that we can lift everybody up, not just necessarily people in your party or people who believe what you believe, then there is a chance for us to improve our nation and our communities. And I sincerely believe that. So I want to see some young blood, you know, on those stages. This Mayor Pete, I don't love the idea that a mayor from South Bend, Indiana could be the president because I feel as though.
See, I do. Well, like you, that description is like
my
problem
with that is I don't. I think that there's some usefulness in understanding federal government and the behemoth that it is and the complexity of running that kind of government.
But Donald, his time as a veteran gives him
that.
Some kind of
some
insight
of that, but it's
into
still,
that.
It ain't running the government. Running a small town in the middle of Podunk, Indiana, and I've been to South Bend, so I can say this. It's not. It ain't running the federal government. It's just not. And it's not running a company, by the way, either. Mm-hmm. So, but I know he's smart. And I know he's not going to run it by himself. He's going to have a lot of help.
That's what I think.
And so in that way, I'm not like, you know, just disposing.
I don't write him off
altogether.
Because, A, I trust his judgment as far as.
And he seems like as decent a human being as this ever run for office. I can
no,
tell
and
you that.
Honestly, yeah. I'll be straight up with you. One of the things that appeals to me about Mayor Pete is one of the things that doesn't appeal to my husband. And that is that he talks about his faith pretty openly.
Yeah.
And I actually have missed that in the, you know, and I again, don't consider myself a member of either party.
Did you just say you miss faith being talked about in politics?
In left-leaning politics.
Oh.
Because it seems to me that if it is, it's kind of giving a superficial, like, yeah, I go to church, so vote for me type of thing. And his is like, really just, it's how it impacts who he is and how he views the world and why certain policies, like why his faith and as a Christian impacts, you know, what he thinks on immigration, right? His immigration policy, which is absolutely diametrically opposed to what the president is pushing. So it was for me just a different. You hear faith a lot on the right. I feel like it's a club that I'm getting beaten over the head with. And now I feel like there's this opportunity to talk about the ways in which faith makes you, like in Utah, welcoming to refugees, kinder to people who are struggling, not judgmental.
How about Utah? Is religious a place as there is in America?
Absolutely. And is conservative a place?
And ultra conservative.
Yeah. And so but they're using the people I know in this state who are religious and spiritual, that faith is saying to them, we have to care for these people. Like, it's our responsibility to be our brother's keeper. Like, we have to reach out to them. We have to do more. And that is what I hear from Mayor Pete, which I don't hear from very many people on the left. I think they kind of avoid the topic of religion because they are trying to appeal to people like some of the members of my family, including my beloved husband, who doesn't want to. He wants faith and spirituality to be something you keep to yourself because he feels like it's very individual. And when you say we're a Christian nation or a Judeo-Christian nation, you automatically eliminate people like him from the conversation.
Right.
And you say, this is not your country.
Too,
we are not your leaders.
That's right.
And I understand that 100%. But as a person like me who sort of sees faith informing decisions in a positive, loving, kind, generous way. I don't hear that very much. And I don't hear it in left-leaning politics. And I want to understand, I know these people have faith. I know they believe in God. I know they, that's impacted, even if they don't practice faith today, it has impacted who they have become. And so that's maybe my favorite thing about Mayor Pete is that he's made it a democratic thing to say, this is how my faith informs me on that subject. And it's a contrast to what I see happening on the right side of the fence. And I appreciate just having the diversity of thought, the diversity of feeling and of faith that you're like, I have a friend who's LDS and someone said to her, how can you be LDS and be a Democrat? And she said,
that is such a ridiculous statement.
I know it is. But, you know, she said, rather than get in a big fight, she said, I'm trying to follow Jesus. And that's what I think you should understand about faith, is that it doesn't mean you're going to be one political party or the other. It means that your feeling about God and your relationship with God is going to inform you in a way. And I feel like that has been we haven't gotten the full discussion, the full range of ways in which that is possible. And Mayor Pete brings that to the table.
We're going to have to switch because we've gone way too long again. we have too much to say, right? So next, impeachment.
Okay.
And talks of that. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. We're on to impeachment now. These hearings have been going on for a little while now. And first of all, I want to mention two things.
Well, the inquiry
is going on.
Yeah.
Right? And they haven't voted on it yet, right? We haven't gotten that far. This is just inquiry. We have testimony and things like that. Even if the president is impeached, it does not mean he will leave office. Okay, let's just get that out in the open. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton was impeached. All right. But he was not voted out of office.
The Senate votes to remove him. Now, there is some talk of moving the trial to the Senate.
But and if that's the case, then he won't get impeached.
He won't get impeached. Yeah.
So this is all political theater in a lot of ways. All right. And whether or not you believe he should be.
And let's be clear that impeachment is a political act. It is not a criminal trial. Like the rules of evidence don't apply. There's not. So people who are like, you know, now, and let's be clear, the president has been invited to participate and his attorneys have been and they have declined to do so.
Right.
And then he has directed most of his staff not to participate.
And those who have, he has lambasted at every possible.
Although I do find it interesting. So we're going to jump right in. Ambassador Gordon Sondland, businessman from Seattle, who donated $1 million to Trump's campaign, and in return, he gets got to be appointed ambassador.
Not the first
to
or the last
EU.
Person of any
of every party.
That's right.
This is the way. 100%. FYI, this is the way it
this
works.
Is the word. Exactly.
If you're rich, you can buy yourself an ambassadorship,
or sometimes you can buy yourself a cabinet position.
Yep.
That lady,
if
that's
you donate
the Secretary
enough
of
money.
Education.
Yeah, you donate enough money.
What's her name?
Betsy DeVos.
Betsy DeVos. Yeah, that's right.
So he donates $1 million. He gets to be ambassador to the EU. And he testified a couple days ago. I don't know when this will air, but he testified that he felt there was a quid pro quo,
yep.
which is
give me something, I'll give you something.
Yeah, that the president wanted an announcement saying that they were investigating Burisma and the Bidens, and in exchange they would get a White House meeting and some military aid that had been held up. Congress had approved it, and it had been held up for a couple months. So that being said, he still has a job. Most of the people who were testifying have either been fired or left their positions, and in fact, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who's mm-hmm. one of the first, who was on the call, who was assigned by the Army to the National Security Council, he was reassigned right after his testimony. And so he's not on the National Security Council anymore. He's been reassigned to some other duties. But they said that's pretty normal to move them in and out. I don't know. You judge for yourself.
Right.
But I thought it was interesting that not only did Trump not attack, at least that I saw, Ambassador Sondland, he didn't fire him. right? So he still has his job. And so I don't know what to make of that. Like, the conspiracy mind of me is, like, if you go in and say as clearly as you did that you think the president committed bribery, basically committed a crime, and you still have your job.
Something the president has admitted to, by the way.
Yeah, he has, actually. But yeah, then you get into all these other debates. But the thing that I found interesting about the impeachment, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it, I thought two things. First is, I've watched my friends post videos from both sides, and these impeachment hearings are doing absolutely nothing to sway anybody from any position.
But they're not supposed to.
Well, I agree. That's not why you do it.
No.
But I'm shocked that they did a poll of independents. And I do question a little bit people who say they were independent, because you and I are independents and we're not.
We have our leanings.
We have our leanings.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that there's been a 6-point swing from October to now in how independents view the impeachment proceedings. They're opposed to it. So they've gone from sort of slightly favoring it to slightly being opposed to it. And here's what I think, two things that my explanation for this after reading the articles and reading the study or the poll. A, polls are notoriously difficult because nobody has home phones anymore. But except
and
for
people don't always tell the truth, honestly.
And that's the other thing. But the other thing is, I think that I've watched a lot of these hearings. And I don't like I don't think they're getting at the truth. I think I had some idea, even though I've watched these before and I know they're sort of a dog and pony show. I thought there would be some, because they were going to have lawyers do the questioning, that this would be somewhat fact finding. And so my opinion of the inquiry has been changed from fairly optimistic to completely negative, because they're not fact-finding. All it is both Republicans and Democrats trying to get their moment that they can make a social media clip and put on YouTube or Twitter or wherever.
But that's politics.
But it's so bad now because of these social media platforms. Like, we need the... And then you hear the zinger. So the exact same series of questions from Jim Jordan and Fiona Hill, I saw Jim Jordan, lambasts former security council member. And then another one is, she takes him to task, So, and it's the exact same clip. It's the exact same clip. So that's when I started thinking, like, not only am I disappointed because this has been less fact-finding than, I mean, they knew the facts. Like,
I don't know that you were going to learn anything different.
Oh, I did. I thought, stupidly. And it's sort of like, I still think the criminal justice system is about justice, but yeah, haha, on me, because it's not.
I know.
But I just have faith in humanity that I shouldn't have.
Amy, you have not been around me long enough. I should have crushed that in you like 2 years ago. I'm surprised. See, this is, she has too much optimism. Okay, so we only got like 2 minutes. So here's the thing. I find that as a person who, I'm kind of a political nerd in the sense that I do follow it along, though I don't follow all the little bitty, minutia. He admitted to it months ago. Okay, so the idea that he has committed an impeachable offense has already been established by the president himself. So the fact that they're doing this is completely political theater and dog and pony show. It is almost useless, and I find it's time waster. In that way, I don't pay that much attention to it because I don't know. I didn't learn anything that I didn't already know, and so in that way. But I also don't think that impeaching the president will do any legitimate good. So I wasn't a fan of the idea, though he did commit the crime. So we should hold him accountable for it. And there's some legitimacy to that. It's to me, if he do it one way or the other, that's fine. I get why. However, when it comes down to it, it is not going to change many people's minds, if any, on either side. So that being the case, it is basically something that politicos enjoy, and they are having at it. Either they're going to be criticizing it or they support it.
And I think that a reason for me, the reason to have these hearings was not because the polls show it, people favor it or don't favor it, because I don't have faith in myself or anybody else to know the best thing to do. I think the best thing to do is, if he, as you say, he admitted it and there's evidence of a crime, is to have the impeachment inquiry and the impeachment trial, even if it is a bust. So even, you know what I mean? Or if it works, whatever the outcome doesn't matter to me as much as there are consequences to doing something. And if we care about the rule of law, which we constantly are saying we do, then we just follow the rules. And everybody will have their vote still. So, but when we come back, I want to just like talk about what I learned. Like, it really actually made me more. I took a lot of heart and hope from the hearings. I know this will shock you because
I don't know who you are. Why?
Because I heard some things that just reminded me of what we're supposed to be about in this country.
Okay. When we come back, Amy will tell me something that I apparently don't know because I don't. I have so little faith. Ye of little faith. I'm Jason Lee. She's Amy Donaldson. This is Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, this is Voices of Reason. We are back with our last segment here. Amy is going to surprise me because she has somehow found hope in this abyss of hopelessness known as the American political system.
No, I think I think the inquiries have been, for the most part, a gigantic political mess, right? But
100%, a cauldron.
When Fiona Hill offered her opening statement, and if you didn't hear it, I encourage you to actually listen
Fiona
to
Hill.
She works for the NSC, and she's an immigrant to
National
this
Security
country.
Council.
Yeah. I actually went back and read all of the opening statements of the witnesses, and I think that is where I found the hope, that there are people who work in government service and they've worked in government service for decades in the shadows. Nobody knows who they are. They don't go on TV. They don't get a lot of accolades.
Unelected bureaucrats.
Unelected bureaucrats. They're not rich. And they love this country.
They are making policy.
And they want to serve this country. And
they are ruining the country.
They are executing policy, for sure. But one of the things she said a couple of things, points that she wanted to make. One of them was them understanding who she was and how she came to be in America. And her story is that had she stayed in England, she would never have been able to rise to the level that she has because of where she was born and what station in life she had been born into. But in America,
sounds like America.
In America, that's different. In America, nobody cares what your accent is. They don't care how you got there, whatever. It's how hard do you work and do you have the skills? And you know, that's what it echoed what Lieutenant Colonel Vindman said. I feel comfortable coming in here despite all the criticism because this is America, and in America we reward people for doing the right thing. And that was just
sometimes
a reminder to me. I know you don't believe it, but I believe it. I don't know that it always happens on the timeline that we want it to happen, but yes, this is the country that does reward people for doing something. And maybe you got to work harder, and maybe you got to work longer hours, and you get less, and your boss takes credit for it or whatever.
Is that being rewarded if your boss takes credit for it?
But one of the things she said that I really think is important, and it reminded me why we started this podcast, Jason.
Yeah.
She said the impact, she was basically drawing this distinction that if you're still saying that Ukraine meddled in our elections, you are perpetuating a myth. It was the Russians that meddled in our elections.
Some people think Russians and Ukrainians are the same.
Well, just don't get me started. Okay. So the Russians, they're enemies. The Russians are trying to kill and take the power and the property of Ukraine, the land. And Ukraine is engaged in a legitimate
war. That's right. In their own war
for
survival.
In which people are dying today. So, but the Russians attacked this, and she said, the unfortunate truth is that Russia was the foreign power that systematically attacked our democratic institutions in 2016. This is the public conclusion of our intelligence agencies confirmed in bipartisan congressional reports. It is beyond dispute, even if some of the underlying details must remain classified. The impact of the successful 2016 Russian campaign remains evident today. Our nation is being torn apart. Truth is being questioned. Our highly professional and expert career Foreign Service is being undermined. And it just was a reminder to me of why it matters that we keep engaging in conversation and we keep engaging in discussion and debate with people who disagree with us. And I had a conversation with a friend last night who said to me, you know, I don't like President Trump. He's crass. He's a bully. We've heard this before. Mm-hmm. But I like his policies. And I asked him which policies. And then I told him, you know, the deal breaker policy for me was family separation. And then we had a debate about, you know, who started it and under which president. And so, but at the end of it, I felt really good that we both left that conversation hearing something we would not have otherwise heard and remaining human beings to one another, right? Like, I wouldn't say this gentleman is a friend of mine, but, you know, we're friendly. Mm-hmm. And I think that all that happens, I've struggled with this because I feel like some of the things that are being put forth, I mean, look at the stuff that came out about Stephen Miller, about the white nationalist agenda. Some of the things that are being put forth are so offensive and they just strike at the very heart of who we are and what kind of country I want to live in and, you know, what makes a human being, right? That I have trouble saying I'm going to keep talking to people like that. I'm going to keep engaging with people like that. But I think if we fail to do that, we let the Russians win and they succeed. That's, to me, that's the thing. They succeed. We have to keep, I was opposed to like Mitt Romney going to lunch and with all the other Republican senators with President Obama or with President Trump. And now I think, go to lunch. Keep having the conversation. Keep talking to that guy. I don't think you're going to persuade him, and hopefully he doesn't persuade you to leave your principles. But you know what? Nothing gets done if we don't talk to one another. Nothing changes. There can be no compromise if we're not even in the same room.
If you don't mind wasting some time on occasion, I would say that's true. Because like you said, I think there are circumstances that shade that a little bit. Having that discussion with the guy you talked about, that makes sense. There's a guy I work out with at the gym, David Gibbon. We have, politically speaking, we are diametrically opposed. However, he's a decent human being. I hear what he says. I don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't matter because we're both people with our own thoughts and we have reasons behind behind why we believe what we believe. And that doesn't make him a bad guy because he don't believe what I believe. It just means he just got a different point of view. That I get. However, when it comes to people, some people, And this on both sides, by the way, you know, who just have these kind of self-serving, generally, ideas that don't serve to unite people in the grand scheme of things, but to give some advantage and disadvantage others, which is what I believe the Stephen Millers and the Donald Trumps of the world. And to be honest with you, there's parts of me to believe the same thing about Nancy Pelosi, because she's a political animal.
No, I did not like how she handled the four women of color who wanted to change the direction of that party.
Absolutely. Yeah. And don't even get me started about either of the Clintons, all right?
You mean our first black president?
Okay. Please let us never say that aloud again on this podcast. Okay, so I'm only saying that to say that I'm not picking sides in this thing. The side I'm picking on is like what Amy talked about, and that is being the best of ourselves.
Yes.
The best of our humanity. And I've said this many, many times. And we need to spend more time finding that in each other so that we can make strides in becoming a more united or at least, you know, civil.
And I think it's more than civility. I really want us to understand one another, right? You don't have to agree with someone to understand where they're coming from, but you have to have some empathy and some compassion for their reality, right? That you can do. Even if you at the end of it say, look, I see and understand why you believe this is the reason that we should invest more in coal mines or whatever. But I see other issues as more important, like clean air, clean water, or that things have evolved. I see this in newspapers. I just think that if you don't do more than tolerate somebody who disagrees with you, we never get to the American ideal. And I want us to live up to those ideals that kept all those immigrants coming here for so long.
You heard what the woman said. We should live up to our ideals. And so we're going to keep trying to beat this drum. Civility and being the best that we can be so that we can live up to the ideals of America. And if you if you like what we're doing, check us out. This is what we do and what we love doing. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @vorpodcast. You can find us on Facebook, and you can also subscribe to episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. And until next time, I'm Jason Lee. If you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.